This podcast of the Radio Cafe comes to you via radiocafe.org, where you can find more information and many other podcasts. Technical support comes from Studio X, providing website design, hosting, e-commerce, and social media marketing, serving Santa Fe to the world since 1994. Find out more at studiox.com. I'd like now to welcome to the Radio Cafe, Bruce Berlin. He is the author of the new book, Breaking Big Money's Grip on America, Working Together to Revive Our Democracy. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Good to have you here. Very important issue, kind of the, in so many ways, the mother of all issues, that is money in politics. Lots of people talking about it. How did you come to write this book?
Most of my adult life, I've been involved in political issues one way or another. My background is in law. But particularly with this issue, I think you might say it started around the Iraq War, when we got to see, after time went on, that the war wasn't really about weapons of mass destruction. It was about oil.
Are you talking about the 2003 or the...
Yes.
Yeah.
The United States and Western countries and big oil like Exxon and so forth were behind the idea of see if we can go into Iraq and take control of that oil. Dick Cheney was an oil man, our vice president at the time. That was very disturbing, and it was clear that the United States spent $2 trillion and hundreds of thousands of Iraqi lives and some thousands of American lives and lots of injuries for a war that was not necessary and was basically over oil. So there was a very big example of big oil and big money controlling U.S. policy. And then you move on to the recession, the Great Recession in 2008. And there were, again, you had Wall Street manipulating the markets and the fraud that went on. And again, big money causing havoc in America. So there were two big issues. And I was a full-time lawyer at the time. So I was looking at these things and I was active in various political issues. But once I retired in the fall of 2012, that became my main objective, was to write a book, and this seemed like the perfect topic.
And the whole issue of not only what the problem is and how did we get here, but how do we go forward and what's in the way? And I want to talk to you about all of those things. But before we get to the nature of a movement to really deal with money in politics, I wanted to ask you, how do you think we got to this point, and describe the point that we are at now compared to perhaps what the political situation of money in politics was when you were a young man?
Well, money in politics has always been a big factor. I don't think there's ever been a time when big money and big corporations didn't have influence over the government. And it's just gotten worse and worse during our lifetimes. What's extreme about it is that we now have tremendous income inequality in this country. Before President Reagan became president, the average CEO was making 30, 40, 50 times the average worker, and now the average CEO of a big corporation is making 500, 600 times as much as the average worker is. As I note in my book, about 95% of all the increase in income or wealth that has happened in the last 8 or 10 years has gone to the top 1%. So it's just really multiplied incredibly.
And the people who are, quote unquote, creating that wealth will argue that the more wealth they create, the more there is to go around. But in fact, that's not happening. It's not
Absolutely
getting
not
to
happening.
The people, and they're essentially keeping it.
Correct.
So we're in a situation where this whole, and you describe this in your book, the whole problem is in so many domains of our life, and it affects everything from energy policy to war policy to banking policy, and all of it goes back to the electoral system and how influential all of those different sectors are on the political system, including the great influence of both campaign contributions and lobbyists. Talk about that.
Well, one of the statistics that I point out in my book is that, you know, people say, well, look, the unions, they have a lot of power and lobbying and whatnot. But the fact is that for every dollar unions and citizens, nonprofit corporations that like Common Cause and those public interest groups spend on trying to influence legislation, big corporations spend $34. So it's 1 to 34. And that's a huge difference
right.
in influence. Plus the fact, the amount of lobbyists, that the pharmaceutical industry had in the health care bill in Obamacare before it was passed, they had like 175 people who were lobbying for their interests for that bill. And then you also have the whole thing of the revolving door, where government people, whether they're actual politicians that have been in office or staff people, go through the revolving, what's called the revolving door, and work in private industry and then lobby their former bosses or their former colleagues. So they have this built-in connection and network that really gives them a lot of extra influence and advantage than the average person does or a nonprofit Common Cause person has.
And the result of all that is basically a huge compromise on democracy in the United States, to the point where, I mean, I've heard people say this is no longer genuinely a democracy.
Well, a number of people said to me, we've never really even had a democracy. It's always been this way. It's just more in our face right now. And yes, I don't think it's a democracy. I mean, you know, the average voter, the average person in America has no real influence on what goes on in Washington or what laws are passed or not passed.
We're talking to Bruce Berlin about his book, Breaking Big Money's Grip on America. We're talking to Bruce Berlin about his book, Breaking Big Money's Grip on America, Working Together to Revive Our Democracy. Now, you make the point that there have been democracy movements throughout the history of the United States, and that they've always faced tremendous odds, and they've always won. What are some examples?
Well, I wouldn't say they're democracy. Well, they're people movement, populist movements. I mean, you have women's suffrage.
That's democracy. Right?
Yeah, no, they're all for creating a larger and more inclusive democracy in different segments of the population. The labor movement, I mean, for the 8-hour work week, or I'm sorry, the 8-hour work day and the 40-hour work week and better working conditions. The civil rights movement,
which is ongoing.
Hopefully many, yes, it's ongoing, but the big changes that were made with the Civil Rights Act and the Voter Rights Act in the 1960s. More recently, the climate change movement and the LGBT movement for gay and lesbian rights.
And all of these faced incredible odds. Walk us through a little bit how each of these movements succeeded and what kind of obstacles they faced in their time.
One of the biggest obstacles is the status quo. The status quo never wants to change, and the status quo is powerful, the establishment. So getting people to accept the fact that gay and lesbians have the same rights as heterosexual people have to get married, it was a new idea for a lot of people. And so it takes a lot of people, a lot of money, a lot of publicity, and force. Is you always have to push and push and push and push. And it's amazing how fast the gay and lesbian right movement was able to get marriage equality in many states. But I also could add, you go back to women's suffrage, it took them 70 years to get the right to vote, and that's half the population. So it's not always quick.
Another piece that's really important, in addition to, for example, lobbying and campaign subsidies and things like that, is, and you've mentioned Wall Street, but the amount of money, and you bring this out in your book, that has been given to bailouts of companies that are like banks and so on that actually aren't working. And this is a pet peeve of mine in you know, people who believe in free market capitalism. It's like, in free market capitalism, when a business fails, it dies. You don't bail
so.
It out.
You would think so, yes.
Yeah.
But that doesn't happen, because the power of Donald Trump is a perfect example of that. He's gone bankrupt 4 times, but he's been able to arise again. The bankruptcy laws are written to help those businesses as opposed to the people who invested in them or the employees. They don't necessarily come out so well, but the owners seem to bounce back.
The money that we heard about in the bank bailout during the Great Recession was, as you say in your book, only the tip of the iceberg. What was the actual amount of bailout that taxpayers paid to these Wall Street banks? And how did you find those numbers?
Well, through research, but I believe my research was over $4 trillion, actually, of American taxpayer money was spent to bail out the banks.
$4 trillion.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of money.
It certainly is.
Where does that money come from? I mean, is this all made up?
The Federal Reserve has the right, and the Congress gave it the right, to print more money. I mean, some of it obviously came from the taxpayers, but some of it came from the government just printing more money.
So when you talk about a democracy movement in America right now, you've got a section in your book where you talk about what should be the goals of a real democracy movement. What are those goals?
Well, you know, there's a lot of movements right now, climate change and, you know, gun control and health care reform and so forth, and immigration reform. But my reading, and three-quarters of people polled recently, is that until we get money out of politics, none of these other issues are really going to be able to be resolved because of the control that big money has on policymaking and our politicians. So one big goal, which is, you know, a lot of people are working on already, is getting rid of the Citizens United case, which says that money is speech and corporations are people. But that's a big thing. I mean, to get that accomplished, you have to have a new constitutional amendment.
And overturn a Supreme Court ruling.
Yes. And there's a couple other Supreme Court cases that Citizens United have been built on. Buckley v. Vallejo. And then since Citizens United, there was another case, McCutcheon versus the FEC. So those three together all need to be overturned to help us get money out of politics. Gerrymandering is another big issue. Right now we have, I give several examples in the book, but one I'll give right now is that because state legislatures in most states are able to manipulate the districts, the boundaries of the districts of congressional offices, like in Pennsylvania, their population allows them to have 18 representatives in Congress. In the 2012 election, Democrats won that election over the state, I think by maybe 500,000 to 1 million people, something like that. But yet, 13 of the 18 districts are in Republican hands because of the way the boundaries have been manipulated so that they squeeze the Democrats into these smaller districts, and the state legislature, controlled by Republicans, were able to do that. And that's happened around the country. So the fact that we have 50 or 60 more Republicans in the House is not representative of the real population of the country. So therefore, we have a minority party that somehow, is because of gerrymandering, has gotten the majority in the House of Representatives.
And Democrats have just let this happen?
Democrats do not have the backbone that Republicans have. They just somehow, they're more willing to compromise. I don't know. I just don't quite understand the Democrats.
We're talking to Bruce Berlin about his book, Breaking Big Money's Grip on America. Another goal that you write about in your book is to establish public financing of all congressional presidential elections. How would that work? Where would the money come from?
Well, you could say that every congressional candidate gets $500,000, or based on the number of, well, in the Senate, it would have to vary because New York State is obviously a much bigger state than New Mexico. The media markets in New York are much more expensive than New Mexico and so forth. So you'd have to, for the Senate, a lot more money for Senate races in New York than you would in New Mexico. And to some degree for the House, too, even though you're representing the same, proportionally the same, almost same amount of people. The media markets are very different depending on California, New York, here and so forth. It would come from the taxpayers.
Yeah. Have you looked at this whole question of why it is, like how it works, that money is so influential? Is it really TV advertising? Is that the problem? I find it so hard to really believe that people make up their minds about whom to vote for based on a 30-second TV ad.
Well, I mean, you know, everybody's different, and some people, I think, do, you know, and some people get on the internet. I think a lot more people these days get on the internet, but most people who are not, you know, wonks or political people that, you know, that's their main thing, they don't spend much time thinking about politics or about who to vote for. You know, I don't think it takes a whole lot for most people to see a few ads and read a couple articles and so forth and make up their minds. Politics is not the main interest of most Americans.
So that makes the mass movement difficult. I mean, because I was thinking about, as I was looking at your book, you've got anti-slavery. I mean, slavery is so heinous and so cruel, and you've got a really clear moral issue. Women's suffrage and women's rights in general, same thing. It's disenfranchisement of a very clearly defined group of people. Civil rights, once again, we're talking black and white. I mean, we're talking a clearly definable issue. When we talk about money in politics, it's much more amorphous. It's a place where a lot of people agree, I mean, from the Tea Party to the far left and a lot of people in between, but you sort of, you don't recognize your brethren on the street. So, like, how do you bring people together around this issue?
Good question. Tough question. You have to make it personal. People who lost their homes in the recession or their jobs or their cars, that was personal. And for them to understand that it was through Wall Street manipulation that a lot of that happened makes it personal that, oh, we need to get money out of politics because these Wall Street banks were able to manipulate the markets and get the politicians afterwards, after all this downfall happened and millions of people lost their homes and their cars and so forth. Wall Street people are doing as good or better than ever. And it's because the government, including our president, has not gone after those people. And if you let those people off, you don't prosecute them, they're going to do it again. So you got to connect the dots.
And so, I mean, and this is the thing that I think is so tricky in American politics, is that whereas you know and I know and probably most of our listeners know that whatever problems they're having in their lives around things like interest rates or mortgage derivative swaps screwing you over.
What
or,
are those?
Yeah, exactly. But we know that these problems have been caused by forces far beyond our control. And yet we all, most of us, have this sense of personal responsibility that if I lose my house, it's my responsibility that it happened and it's my responsibility to figure out how to survive. And let's say you lose your house or the value of your house goes through the floor and you're, as they say, underwater. How does joining a mass movement help you in the short run? That's another thing that's so tricky about this.
That's a good point. It may not help you in the short run, but it may lift your spirits because then you come together with other people who have suffered the same or similar circumstances. And joining a movement, whether it's your church or your civic organization or a democracy movement, coming together it's partly a spiritual thing. And knowing that you're not alone, that we're all in this together. And unfortunately, America, the United States, was built on this frontier kind of individualism. I can do it myself. I'm going to build my business. I'm going to find gold in California. And some people succeed that way, but most people don't. And we have a much better chance of succeeding. In fact, the only way, in my opinion, that we're going to succeed in terms of changing the government and getting what we really want is if we do recognize that we're in this together and we work together and build a movement.
You said the word spiritual a moment ago, and you are a practitioner of Buddhism. How has your Buddhist practice affected the way you see the democracy movement?
Well, just, I mean, Buddhism basically is that we're all one, regardless of gender or profession or whatever. We're all interconnected. And as Americans, I believe we're all interconnected. And we have to use that spirit of interconnectedness to come together and to find a way to build a movement that's going to overcome this huge obstacle of big money. And it's not going to be easy, for sure.
What do you see as the strategies for doing it?
Well, I think it was Tip O'Neill who said, all politics is local. And so we have to start locally. And in my book, I come up with this idea of creating DOCs, democracy organizing committees. The country is ailing. We need to heal it. We need DOCs to heal it. And DOCs would be groups in local communities like Santa Fe that were broad-based, that were bipartisan or nonpartisan, that included women and minorities and business people, Republicans and Democrats, not party leaders, labor people, and so forth. And in fact, in the January issue of Greenfire Times, I wrote an article that gave an example. And the example that I used there was, we have a law in New Mexico that regulates oil and gas. That law was passed in 1935. And it has not been amended since. And that's 80 years ago. And so we are using 1935 economics to regulate and to, if an oil or gas company drills and pollutes the water, they are fined. But they're fined based on 1935 economic standards. Now, everybody wants clean water. I mean, that's a broad issue that seems like whether you're a Republican or Democrat or business person or laborer or whoever you are, you want to make sure your water that's coming into your house is clean and pure. So that would be an issue that you could organize a broad coalition around, a DOC, a Democracy Organizing Committee. And I know Common Cause has been working on this, but it's got to be a broad coalition, because at the same time, you have 3.5 times as much money by the oil and gas industry lobbying the state legislature against any amendments as you have Common Cause and other public interest groups lobbying for change. So you create a DOC, and you bring more and more people together around this issue, and you build on something like that.
How do you think that state legislatures and our national Congress would look different and behave differently if we had campaign finance reform and a voter's bill of rights and redistricting and the end of gerrymandering and so on? If we really got money out of politics, what do you think, how would the world shift?
Incredibly. Because then you wouldn't have Congress people pretty much owned by their corporate sponsors. They wouldn't be getting money from Exxon or the pharmaceutical lobby, or depending on what issue you talk about, the gun lobby. They'd only be getting money from the people through the tax system, and therefore the people's interests would be primary, not the corporate and big money interests.
Bruce Berlin is the author of Breaking Big Money's Grip on America, Working Together to Revive Our Democracy. He will be at Upsit Bookstore this coming Saturday at 3 o'clock, speaking and signing books. That's in the DeVargas Mall right here in Santa Fe. Anything you want to let us know before we go today?
Well, yeah, you know, it's one thing to support this idea. It's one thing to say, yes, we should be doing this. But it's another thing to make a commitment and to get out and really be part of a movement and to help build a process that would make change. You know, people's lives, they're busy. Everybody has their families and their jobs and so forth. And so this does not necessarily or easily come to the top of their list of priorities. But I think we are in a crisis. And if we don't make it a priority, we are moving towards a full-blown plutocracy, which is a government run by and for the very wealthy. So I would urge people to get involved, read my book, join nonprofits or other organizations that are working to get money out of politics and help build this movement.
Bruce Berlin, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Well, thank you for the opportunity.
This podcast of the Radio Cafe comes to you via radiocafe.org, where you can find more information and many other podcasts. Technical support comes from Studio X, providing website design, hosting, e-commerce, and social media marketing, serving Santa Fe to the world since 1994. Find out more at studiox.com.